Imagination Studios presents Dancing Shoes by Noel Stretfield, read for you by Elizabeth Sastra. Chapter 1. The Dancing School. The School of Dancing was in North London. Outside it looked just an ordinary house, rather big perhaps for the shabby neighbourhood to which it belonged. But it was anything but ordinary to the neighbours, who knew that in it were trained Mrs. Wintle's little wonders. Cora Wintle had danced on the stage. She had never got beyond the chorus, for though she danced well, she did not have a good figure, nor was she pretty. But she had loved the life, and had found it hard to give it up when she had fallen in love and married an artist called Tom Lennox. Tom was a good painter, but a poor earner of money. Tom and Cora had been married about a year when they had a baby. She was a little girl, and they christened her Dulcie. It was after Dulcie was born that Cora saw that if she was to bring the child up properly, she must have more money than Tom was likely to earn. That was when she had her big idea. Why should she waste her dancing talent? She was getting old for chorus work, and anyway, she could not be away from home. But why should she not teach others to dance? Cora was a person who usually, by determination, got her own way. If she had not been that type, she would never have got into any chorus, for she was usually turned down at sight. But she had refused to be beaten, and had worn managements down by her persistence until they had said, "Engage Cora Wintle. I'm tired of saying no." The dancing school had its start 2 days after Cora had first thought of it. She was out shopping with Dulcie when, by mistake, she pushed the perambulator into a passer-by, a woman, not at all young, but fat and cosy-looking. The woman won her way straight to Cora's heart by not being at all angry about the perambulator hitting her in the stomach, but instead being rapturous about Dulcie. "Oh, what a little love," she said in a warm, purry voice. "I've looked after many a baby in my time, but I never saw a prettier." That conversation led to a cup of tea in a shop. There is nothing like a cup of tea for telling things. In no time, Cora was explaining about Tom not earning much and her dream of a dancing school. "I was well trained myself, and I would see any child that came to me was well trained. I shall call myself Wintle, as that's how I'm known in the theatre. Tom won't mind." The stranger, whose name was Miss Purser, then told Cora about herself. "I've been a children's nanny since I was a slip of a girl, but now, provided I can be with children, I might give it up. My ship's come in, so to speak. Only I wish it hadn't the way it has. One of my babies, the Honourable George Point, maybe you read of it in the papers. Eaten by a shark, he was." "Goodness," said Cora. "A shark! Just fancy! And him an honourable, too." Miss Purser shook her head. "No respecter of persons, sharks aren't. Well, when the will was read, it was found he'd left his old nan a little money and a house, bless him. In North London, the house is. Not a nice part, and a great barrack of a place." The idea hit them both at the same moment. There was Miss Purser with a house suitable for a dancing school and wanting to be with children. And there was Cora with the training to teach children to dance. Why should they not become partners? A few months later, Cora moved her family, and Miss Purser moved herself, into Miss Purser's house. Cora put an advertisement in the local paper. "Cora Wintle, teacher of children for the stage. Classes daily, 67 Ford Road. Telephone Primrose 15150. She showed the advertisement to Miss Purser, whom by then she was calling Percy. "How's that, Percy?"
"Very nice, Mrs. Wintle. Now I do wonder who your first pupil will be."
It was not a pupil who first answered the advertisement, but a theatre manager who had liked Cora.
"Is that the Cora Wintle who was on tour with my Sparklers company?"
Cora said it was.
"Well, I saw your advert, and I'd like to do something for an old friend. Next summer, I shall want 12 kiddies for a show I'm touring round the seaside towns. You're going in for troops?"
Cora was not a person to let an opportunity pass. Even as the manager was speaking, she could see troops of children trained by her dancing all over the country.
I certainly am. What are you calling them, dear?
There was a tiny pause while Cora thought hard. Then the answer came to her. Mrs. Wintle's Little Wonders. In 10 years, everybody except Tom had stopped calling Cora by her Christian name. She was Mrs. Wintle, or Mrs. W., wherever she went. The school was a great success. The Little Wonders were known to everybody in the theatre world, and they had appeared in films and on television. When the school started, Cora had been the only dancing teacher, and Percy had done everything else in the house. But soon there were two other teachers besides Cora, Pat and Ina. And Percy was supposed to be only the wardrobe mistress and to employ the matrons who looked after the children when they were working. Actually, Percy never was only the wardrobe mistress, for she went on being the person everybody, staff, children and Tom, came to whenever they wanted something, were unhappy, or had a worry. Being the owner of the successful Little Wonders troops changed Mrs. Wintle. There were plenty of other schools training children for the stage, and it meant pushing harder than anyone else to get her dancers known. A person who spends all his or her life pushing to get to the top gets tough as a result of working so hard. This happened to Mrs. Wintle. She became a rather frightening person. In fact, sometimes people said she had a stone where other people had a heart. There was one person who was not at all afraid of Mrs. Wintle, and that was Dulcie. Dulcie took after her father, who was good-looking, with grey-green eyes and dark, curly hair. And from being one of the prettiest babies Percy had ever seen, Dulcie grew up to be a noticeably lovely little girl, the sort of child people turned to look at in the street. Of course, the moment she could toddle, she had learned to dance, and so by the time she was 10 and a half, she danced very nicely. Unfortunately, Dulcie was very conscious that she was an outstanding child and did not try to hide it, and so was a great trial to the rest of the school. Behind her back, the children called her Little Show-Off and
That Awful Dulcie Palsy,
and the staff called her Mrs. W's Little Horror. But of course, they had to be as nice as they could to Dulcie's face, for none of them dared quarrel with Mrs. Wintle. One evening, early in March, when dancing lessons had finished for the day, Mrs. Wintle came into the room Percy used as the wardrobe, looking very unlike her usual calm, hard self.
"I've got to go away, Percy. Tom's just had a phone call. His sister-in-law has died."
Percy laid down a pink frock on which she was working and made sympathetic clicking noises.
"Oh, dear. Very sudden, isn't it?"
"Yes. It was an accident."
Percy tried to remember the little she had heard of the Lennox relations.
"Aren't there two little girls?"
"Yes, about Dulcie's age. Rachel and Hilary. That's why I'm going. It's so tiresome. But it looks as if we may have to bring Rachel here. We have no responsibility for Hilary. She is an adopted child. I shall arrange to have her sent to a home."
Chapter 2. Rachel and Hilary. Rachel and Hilary lived in Folkestone in a shabby house with a tiny garden at the back. Each summer, their mother had taken in boarders, and in the winter too, when anyone wanted to stay. Rachel and Hilary did not think the house shabby, for it was home, and they loved it. But they did think it was nicer when they had it to themselves. Rachel had once said so.
"It's so nice, Mummy, when it's only us."
"I couldn't agree more, darling," her mother had answered. "But it means dull food and no fun." Rachel had been leaning against her mother's chair. When her mother said that, she had laid her face against her hair. "Silly Mummy. As if Hilary and I mind about food and fun. We only want you." Hilary had been lying on the floor looking at a magazine a visitor had left behind. Now she said, "I don't mind giving up my dancing lessons if that would help." That made Rachel and her mother laugh, for it was no sacrifice to Hilary to give up any kind of work.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?